It's music by Gioachino Rossini, his introduction theme and variations for clarinet, and originally for orchestra, and arranged for band, and performed by clarinetist Julian Bliss, who was a guest with the Air National Guard Band of the Midwest of Peoria, who will be performing at Paxton Buckley Loda High School tomorrow, along with the PBL High School Band. Concert starts at 7 o'clock. It is a free program, and we appreciate both of the sergeants, members of the band, who joined us on the show just a few moments ago. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation, dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation. Next up, we're going to talk a little bit about opera, or maybe a lot about opera. It's a really wonderful opportunity for all of the singers involved in this program, singing actors involved in the program, by which I mean University of Illinois School of Music Opera program. It is not often that they get to do Verdi at all, much less Verdi's one and only comic opera, Falstaff. And it is going up next Thursday, the 14th, and continuing through Sunday the 17th, evening performances Thursday through Saturday, Sunday matinee at 3 o'clock. It's all happening at the Kranert Center for the Performing Arts on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. This is also a very special production because it happens to be the final production for the program's artistic director, Eduardo Diaz Munoz, who has been on this show numerous times to talk about, introduce, present highlights from the many operas that he's been involved with for 10 years now. Has it actually been 10 years?
10 years, yeah. This is my 10th season.
And that's all you could take of us? Is that?
No, actually, I envision myself staying here a little longer, but opportunities come, and you never should give up opportunity for security.
I think if somebody had given me a chance to go live and work in Australia, I might have taken it too.
There you go.
Sydney, what's the name of the school there?
Conservatorium, Sydney Conservatorium of Music, and it belongs to the University of Sydney.
And you're going to be the orchestra director there, if I remember correctly.
Yep, correct. The chief conductor, as they call it there.
Chief conductor.
Chair of conducting. And I will overlook all the conducting program as well as all the ensembles.
And will there be any opera in your life at that point?
Probably, yes. But there's one of my staff members. It's the opera director. So eventually I will get to conduct an opera.
Because you'll tell him I'm going to conduct this one?
Yeah, I guess that's the way it'll work. I'll have my plate full, though, with the symphony orchestra. So in a way, it's like a comeback for me, since I was trained as a symphonic conductor.
Well, I remember when you first got here that, or at least maybe later on, you had said this was a large and interesting opportunity for you because you didn't have background in opera, and yet here you were presented with this opportunity.
Right.
You've enjoyed it, I gather.
Very much, very much so. But this tenure has been a joyful tenure, really. Because when I arrived here, I had only conducted 3 operas in my life before I came here. Actually, I always wonder why I got the job with so little experience in opera. And now, after 32 productions, it's just amazing. Just here, because I conducted then other productions in other countries after this opportunity came.
What are some of the things that you think you can take from this experience into what you're gonna do next, or even just in general as an operatic conductor, taking them back to the symphonic world?
Wow, the first things that come to mind is the theatricality of it. I composed music for several theater plays in the 70s, so probably that nurtured me when I had to be conducting operas, because I have a love for theater as well. Of course, my main source of expertise was music, so I think it was just the right combination. So I was able to explore more of my love and taste for theater, and with such fantastic colleagues as stage directors, I learned a lot. So if I put all of those experiences together in a blender, I guess that I will come up with a lot of theatricality to, not to my own self, but to the way I approach symphonic work.
What about the notion of working with voices? Does that transfer?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely, because all the instruments are an imitation of the human voice. All of them. So, and I kept on constantly, even before I became involved in opera, I kept on constantly asking all players, sing, sing, you have to sing, whether it's a flute, a cello, a trombone, or a horn, or whatever. It was always my favorite verb, sing, even in a piano. You have to make that legato singing voice. And so, of course, now that notion is reinforced.
Now you have the pedigree to say, you know, I know what singing is. And
yeah.
But
Even though I'm a lousy singer, but I think...
Were
I
you can, a singer?
Well, when I was a kid, I was in the several children's chorus, and then in the conservatorium in Mexico, I was the leading tenor, believe it or not.
You do have the speaking voice of a tenor. You do have the speaking voice of a tenor.
Oh, yes. Say. And at one point when I was about 13 or 14, I was a countertenor.
Now, if you could have held on to that, you might have had a very different career.
Oh, completely different. Completely different.
That, if good ones of those are pretty rare. What made you decide that this should be your swan song? Does it have anything to do with the fact that it was Verdi's swan song?
Well, no, it happened by chance, Kevin. Honestly, it happened by chance because when I planned the season, I didn't think it was going to be my last opera. That came later in the game. I wanted to pay homage to Verdi's Bicentennial, definitely not Wagner's, like I've said repeatedly, because we have young voices and I wouldn't be able to live for the rest of my life knowing that I screw up some young voices by my whim of doing Wagner. So that was out of the question. But with Verdi, I thought, okay, we've already done Traviata, we've already done Rigoletto. What else could be representative of our program to celebrate Verdi's Bicentennial? And the only one I was able to come up with was Falstaff. And the fact that it was actually his second comedy in all his life, I thought that it was such a gracious way of saying farewell to his beloved art and also to life, because he ended up composing it by the time he turned 80. So I thought of it as a remarkable lesson to all of us that in spite of all the mishaps and all the tragedies that he survived during his lifetime, you know, losing wife, losing children, and so forth, that he left life with a big grin.
This is my ignorance about Verdi's output. I was thinking it was his only comedy. What was the other one? What was the first one?
It was his second one, and I'm trying to think of the name. He composed it when he was 27. It was Face on a Farce. I was trying to look up the name of that piece because it's not that much done.
Well, then I don't feel too badly about it. I'm looking around the room here, and nobody else knows the answer either. So
now, well, Falstaff is regarded as his only comedy, and it's his only commedia lirica. The other one, he called it, what's the name? He called it drama giocoso.
Funny drama, more or less. Or
funny drama. Yeah. So in a way, that's why I consider Falstaff his second funny work, in spite of his output of 26, 27 operas.
Well, before we hear some highlights from it, we've got six cast members here with us. Let's just say, I'll say briefly that Falstaff, the opera, is based on the Shakespearean character of Falstaff, which showed up, I guess, in what, three of his plays, both of the Henry the Fourths? Is there more than two Henry the Fourths? There are two. And then The Merry Wives of Windsor, none of which I've seen. And so I'm... You know, my experience, and I've never seen the opera, so I'm looking forward to it next week. But let me introduce the director, stage director for the production, Kathleen Conlon. Give us a bit of an overview of the plot, the drama of the opera, and just generally your dramatic approach to it.
Yeah. I found it very interesting looking at Merry Wives of Windsor and the narrative line for the opera Falstaff. I don't know if you know the anecdote about why Merry Wives of Windsor even existed as a play.
I don't.
The historical anecdote, and I continue to call it an anecdote, is that when Queen Elizabeth encountered the character of Falstaff in the Henry IV plays, she was so taken with the character, she begged Shakespeare to write a play about him. So the Merry Wives of Windsor is total fiction, and the whole characterization of Falstaff in that play is total fiction, not based really on the Falstaff of the Henry plays. And it was a particularly lovable character and a lovable play, Merry Wives, because it was one of the only real domestic comedies. Most of Shakespeare's plays take place either in the court with nobility or with higher rank. And this is one of the only plays that really is a domestic comedy. And Falstaff, of course, is the key figure within that. But the emphasis is on the two women. In the opera, the priorities and the focus shifts so that Falstaff is the primary focus. The women work on him, and they're the plot device. But it's the outlandish characterization of Falstaff that really characterizes the entire story. And it's essentially a man of extraordinary appetite. And I think that's why I keep reminding myself about this, is that it's a character of extraordinary appetite. And appetite means everything. It means food, drink, sex, everything, the whole world. And it's all represented by this enormous man, physical enormous man that towers over everybody else. And he needs money. And that's the primary aspect of the plot, is that he's got to get his hands on some money. And so he wants to woo the two wealthiest women in town in order to get the money so he can continue his profligate ways of drinking and carousing.
To feed all those appetites.
Exactly.
Well, we have, I think, four excerpts we're planning to do today, or maybe three. We're supposed to do a ladies' quartet, and I only see three ladies. So I don't know how that's going to work out. But.
Well, no, because we had planned to do the quartet, one of the quartets. But unfortunately, Cassandra Jackson, Cassie Jackson, is not feeling well since last night rehearsal, and since health should come first and foremost, always, then we decided that she should stay home, because tonight we have another dress rehearsal. So just, you know, we said, don't worry, we'll figure it out. So don't worry, we won't make a quartet with three.
Okay.
We just figured out a different section.
Well, you said something about being a countertenor at one point. So. Uh-huh, yeah. That was then, right?
Yeah, exactly. That was then, and it was way back, before any of our cast was born, actually.
Well, what would we like to start with?
I think that a good way to start is with Ford, when he comes disguised as Fontana, trying to persuade Falstaff to conquer his own wife. But this aria particularly deals with how bad Ford feels about what he's doing, and he has this soliloquy while Falstaff is going to his quarters to embellish himself, as he says. I'm going to fix myself to look pretty.
No? As best
as you can. Valo a farmi bello. I'm going to put myself very attractive to woo this Alice that you want to conquer. And of course he doesn't know that it's Ford is in disguise and that it's
her husband. Yeah.
And so this soliloquy is it's one of the most dramatic moments in the opera, actually, to balance out all the comicity, because he has all these tormenting feelings about what am I doing? I'm asking for this guy to seduce my own wife.
Without knowing that it's going to be a done deal in not very long. Well, in the role of Ford, we have Jin Ok Lee, and at the keyboard, we have Buell Min Ma. This is from Verdi's opera Falstaff, which will open at the Krannert Center from the University of Illinois Opera Program next Thursday and continue through Sunday the 17th. It's live and local.
Ore altar. enormi crest consola mia testa. Master Ford, dormi, svegliati, so, di destra, tua moglie scarra, e mette in malassetto, rurto, la tua casa, ed il tuo letto. L'ora è fissata, tramato l'inganno, sei gappato e truffato, e poi diranno che un marito geloso è un insensato. Già dietro a me infame, con i fischian passando, mormor mallo scherno. Oh, matrimonio inferno, tona demonio, nella lor moglie abbian fei dei bappei. Affiderei la mia birra in tedesco, tutto il mio desco un olandese l'orco. Mia bottiglia d'acqua vite un turco, non mia moglie sa stessa. Ollai da sorte, quella brutta parola in cor mi torna, le corna, pue capron lefsa torte, oh, le corna, le corna. No, socio, reo, cannato e piccureo. Prima li accoppio e poi li colgo, li accoppio, li colgo, li accoppio, li accolgo, li accoppio, li colgo, li accolgo, li accoppio.
Well, this is as close as I have. Well, I've been this close to opera singers in the studio before, but they've never been facing me. That's loud, and sounded wonderful. Jinook Lee in the role of Ford from Verdi's Falstaff, and that production opening next Thursday at the Krannert Center in Urbana. The pianist Bjul Nimla. I was listening to some of the opera earlier, and what I was hearing was mostly reminded me of Mozart and Rossini, and I mean there were parts of it where I thought he's just using a musical template, and when I was reading the plot, I was thinking he's also using, you know, or Boito, Arrigo Boito was using a dramatic template to completely confuse anybody trying to read, and of course anybody in the room, but this sounded like it could have come from the opera he'd just written before, Otello, at least moments of it.
Exactly.
Eduardo Díaz-Muñoz, who's artistic director and conductor of the program, and Kathleen Conlon as stage director, how do you balance all those things from your point of view?
Theatrically, I think the way you balance it is the realization that almost every moment has its opposition in some ways, and so that there are many scenes that are constructed that are going along a comic tilt, and suddenly there's something that turns it into serious, and then there's a moment that brings it right out. And actually, this aria is framed that way. there's the scene plays comically up to that point. There's music that transitions emotionally into the aria, and then there's music that takes us out of the aria and moves immediately into a lighthearted comedy. So that's the same. What's happening musically, the performer has to emotionally and psychologically play those changes. It's actually very modern, that kind of attack in terms of performance.
And does the frame make what isolated seems like a very serious moment to seem like a comic moment almost, in spite of itself, when you actually put it in context, or not?
Not exactly. I think it becomes almost a commentary. As opposed to switching the tenor of the emotion at that point, so no, I don't think it does that.
They're doing funny things in this opera, but well, as he's doing, he's questioning whether this
right.
is a good idea
Absolutely.
Or not in life as well.
In a way, it's musically also he's mocking himself for doing what he's doing in the middle of all this situation. Which is an antecedent, musically speaking, to the balance overall, because at the very end, Verdi chose to compose an 8-part fugue to finish the opera, the entire opera. And actually, we see all 10 main characters singing along with the chorus, so it's a very complex texture. But the text is that we are all a joke, and that everything is a joke.
Well, and he's regretting what he's, or at least thinking about regretting what he's doing. And
exactly.
he gets his comeuppance in just a minute right after this.
Exactly.
Everybody
exactly.
does, don't they, in the end?
Everybody.
Especially Sir John. What do we want to do next?
Okay, talking about balance, even in a comedy, this duplet of Boito and Verdi came up with a fantastic solution. So in the frame of a comedy, we have this tragic moment or this dramatic moment, but then we also have a love story that is embodied by the two youngsters in the plot. And of course, the daughter has been arranged, at least Ford thinks so, to be married to a French doctor. And of course, there's a young fellow there that gets in the way, and he wins the heart of Nanetta. His name is Fenton, and then Dr. Caius ends up marrying someone else, as you will see in the production.
This is one of those. I guess operatic cliches, in a way, where this sort of thing happens in opera, as well as another comic.
Well, and specifically, this is so Shakespearean. I mean, the entire thing, the characters and the situations.
What we call classic comedy.
Exactly.
In the role of Fenton, we have Benjamin Crumrig, and in the role of Nanetta, Millie Kwon. Again, Bjørn Nimla at the keyboard here on Live and Local from Verdi's Falstaff.
Torna la salvo,
torna la gara, felice
para,
la mira in alto, l'amore audace ne torneo, sua corte vuo.
Marmo, ti guardo, t'aspetto al varco.
E l'opro e l'arco.
E il bacio e il dardo, vada, la freccia fatal già scocca dalla mia bocca sulla tua treccia.
Ecco, ti ha vinto.
Chiedo la vita. Facciamo la pace e poi se vuoi rincominciamo
e da quel gioco che dura poco basta
amor mio
vincente addio
bocca baciata non perde ventura
anzi rinnova come fa la luce
poca baciata non perde ventura.
Come fa?
Non perde
singing here.
From Verdi's Falstaff, in the role, I've just switched my piece of paper here, but Milia Kwan in the role of Nanetta. Mm-hmm. And where do we go here? Fenton, Benjamin Crumb.
Yeah.
I pulled out my cast list because just to mention that four of the main characters, I guess, are double cast. Five of them, as is often the case with the School of Music Opera programs, because it is, after all, an educational opportunity, mm-hmm. and give that opportunity right. to as many as possible. You said, Eduardo, that Wagner, for students of this age, and I say this age, there's a fairly wide age range mm-hmm. at the School of Music and the voice division, but it's not nobody in the age that you're going to give Wagner. Can't that also be said for other Verdi operas?
Oh, yes,
you would not
absolutely.
Want somebody singing roles that heavy, but does the comedy allow him to write more lightly for the voice and so is more workable for young singers?
No, not really. It's more the maturity of the voice and the maturity of the singer. As a matter of fact, I wanted to do Falstaff since 2008, but we just didn't feel, with the late Tom Schleiss and myself, we didn't feel that we had a baritone that could face that role until Timothy Renner appeared, and then they said, okay, we need to revisit that. And it was a lot of discussion, even with Timothy's professor, because he thought that it would be very heavy on him. But after two productions of having worked with Timothy, I knew that he could do it. And he has not proven me wrong at all. Actually, I'm very pleased and very proud of what he has done.
But do you think the nature of the opera, the nature of Verdi's writing,
mm-hmm.
Is perhaps lighter than in his other operas simply because it's comic?
It has to do a little bit with that, but there are certain lines that he goes a little more low, say for the baritones, or even high for the tenor or the sopranos. So I wouldn't link it with the dramatic purpose, whether it's a drama or a comedy. I think it's just the style and what he had in mind and what he came up with in the very end. I really don't think that composers, at least the ones that I've studied and the ones that I've met in my lifetime, think in terms of if it's going to be a drama, then it has to be, say, in A flat minor. I think that it just pops into their minds and they just write it as they conceived it. Eventually, there are some masters like Verdi, Puccini, that they specifically, choose keys that are more appropriate to the voice, like, say, G flat or G natural, that the voice just naturally travels, and for the singers it's much more comfortable. For a specific type of, say, soprano, whether it's going to be a dramatic soprano or a spinto, then he has a certain key in mind. The same for a baritone or a high baritone or a bass baritone. Then they think in terms of what key I'm going to write this specific aria or duet or trio, but not in terms of the dramatic purpose of the piece itself.
We're talking with Eduardo Diaz Munoz, artistic director of the University of Illinois School of Music Opera Program, for one more opera, this one, and also Kathleen Conlon, who is the stage director for this production, which happens next Thursday through Sunday at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Thursday through Saturday evening performances. Sunday the 17th is an afternoon matinee. And if you know somebody who's in who is one of these double cast roles, you might want to be sure to ask them which which performance they're doing, lest they be very unhappy with you if you go to the wrong performance. I say this because I did that once, and I went to the wrong one. Not that there's such a thing as a wrong one, but because that things are double cast. Where are there any unusual things you're doing with the setting, Kathleen?
I think every production is unusual on its own terms.
Well, I mean, are you setting it when it where it's set?
We're pretty much doing it where it's set, I think, because it's a character-driven story. This is not one that I think has thematic value that would benefit from some transposition of culture or transposition of era. I didn't feel that way at all. I felt that this really was embedded in a kind of late medieval world, just burgeoning on the Renaissance, and so we've kept it there.
There's commentary from you in the program about the characterization that happens musically for each character, for each actor in this case, where it's incumbent on the actor to, I'm getting lost in my own sentence here, to characterize their what they're singing physically.
Absolutely.
Eduardo mentioned earlier at the end there's the 8-part fugue, and there's a quote in here from some Mozart, I guess, that it's only in opera that you can get away with that because of what the actors are supposed to do musically with it. Mm-hmm. What's your challenge as a director to help these guys bring that up?
Two things. I maybe rather than a challenge, I say in terms of what I think are potential solutions to this. One is I spoke early on how important gesture was, and that I think that what I would call indicative gesture, that in order to make the character and the situation work, we point up more things physically than I would normally do, because I think that's part of the difference of the characterizations. The other is what struck me as I was doing my analysis of the piece was how unique each of the 6 scenes are. And so they required that I stage them in a slightly different way. And I don't say, well, you stage every scene differently. Well, that's true to a certain extent. But with this, it meant as I kept examining what was happening musically in terms of groups segueing into solos and back in again, that it caused there to be a different way of using stage space, a different way of doing entrances and exits, a different way of determining how much scenic element is in a particular scene, which in turn then creates different choreographic possibilities in the scene itself. And I've never encountered anything where it was that distinct.
Mm. So there's only 6 scenes in this whole opera,
mm-hmm.
2 scenes per act.
Yes.
That's unusual on its own,
yep.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Are we having Sir John next?
Of course, with the rest of the cast. It's a little longer excerpt. I guess that... yeah, we'll manage, or then I'll just ask to stop. We begin with Mrs. Quickly. And I never figured out if she was the godmother of Alice or maybe the godmother of
Nanetta.
Or merely a general gossip.
Well, yeah, that is so, even in the...
That's my take on her.
Right, yeah, the do-it-all at Windsor, especially in the Shakespeare play, right?
So this is all one scene we're going to hear excerpt from?
Well, it's just from one scene, and all characters are, most of the characters are involved, even Alice.
Okay.
And, of course, Sir John.
And in the role, I've got to pull up my other sheet of paper here. You're Rachel, right? Rachel Coleman in the role of Dame Quickly, and we'll introduce the others afterwards.
Presenza del cavalier segreta messaggero Sir John si degna ad accordarmi udienza ma coglie trofio in fur ante scapposa buongiorno buona donna Reverenza a lui m'inchino molto sequiosamente poi passo
tutto le notizie chiotte, lui beve grosso e lui di mio massiccio frutta la inchiotte. Infin per farla sfiggia, vi crede l'entrame, innamorate cote delle bellezze sue, e lo vedrete presto, presto, presto ai vostri piedi.
Quando?
Oggi, qui, dalle due alle tre, dalle due alle tre.
Sono già le due.
Dalle due alle tre.
Dalle due alle tre.
Dalle due alle tre, dalle due alle tre, dalle due alle tre.
No, e qui. Già tutto preparato. Guardate quello c'è sta diventato.
Sarà un affare caio.
Non ne può. E tu non ridi. Che cos'hai? Tu piange. Che cos'hai? Dillo tua madre.
Mio padre.
Ebbè.
Mio padre.
Ebbè.
Mio padre volle che un mio marito è dottor Caio.
A quel pedante.
A quel gonzo,
a quel
bezzopolo.
No, no,
no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no.
Piuttosto la pirata viva.
Donna mi trona di cose di cavolo.
Ben detto, brava.
Non teme.
E viva col dottor Caio. Non mi sposerò.
Mettetelo, poi quando avrò chiamato voterete la cesta nel fossato.
Bomba!
Taci! Andate!
Che bombardamento!
Prepariamo la scena. Qua una sedia.
Qua il mio liuto.
Primo il paravento. Bravissime così. Più aperto ancora. Fra poco si incomincia la commedia. Comari di viso e loro, loro danza, la risata sonora, l'aita risata che scoppia, che scherza, che sfora l'armata, che tardi disperza. Gaie comari, vestosa brigata, soglietto viso, spente sorriso, spende dal riso, la volta fulgor,
you, ladies. Now let's hear Sir John.
For a few seconds.
the title name.
Timothy Renner in the role of John Falstaff.
Al fin tuo colpo raggiante fior tuo colto or potrò morir felice, avrò vissuto molto, dopo quest'ora di beato amor.
Soave, Sir John.
Mia bella Alice. Non so farlo svenevole, e lusingarne usar frase fiorita, ma dirò tosto il mio pensier colpevole.
Cioè.